Hey, welcome to this episode of Light 'Em Up. We take a deep dive on the criminal justice system, crime scene investigation, and leadership. We enlighten, educate, and empower others with the truth. Like it or not, the truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately, the truth delivers. Hey, I'm your host, Phil Rizzo. I'm the principal owner of Rizzo's Protective Group. We are a security consulting firm that deals with high-risk behaviors and works to mitigate those risks. Headquartered out of Akron, Ohio, and with offices in the Bronx, New York, and Cerro Alto, the Dominican Republic. As we put the ball on the tee to line things up for kickoff, we speak life, health, and prosperity over each and every one of you, and we want to welcome you to this explosive episode. Hey, welcome back. Welcome back to another explosive edition of Light 'Em Up. Hey, we know that if their feathers are ruffled, our mouths haven't been muffled. We don't stop nor stay silent for anyone. The truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately the truth delivers. And democracy's best defense is an informed citizen. We deliver the facts, not the fiction, covering every story with integrity and passion. Tonight again, we have the distinct honor, privilege, and pleasure of sitting down for another explosive interview. This is a follow-up with Jenna Gajewski Latiger, the sister of Crystal McCrory Jones. On February 9th, 2023, Jenna's sister, Crystal McCrory Jones, was found dead in her home in the small, sleepy town of Oak Grove, Louisiana, from what was reported to be an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. Oak Grove is the parish seat of West Carroll Parish in northeastern Louisiana, way up in the tippy-top right corner of Louisiana. The population was 1,441, according to the 2020 U.S. Census, which, from a few photos I've seen of and around Oak Grove, it looks like you guys have grown to where there are about 2,275 people in the town. As you may remember from a previous episode of Light 'Em Up, specifically from Season 2, Episode 6, entitled Blood, Bullets, Body Bags, and Toe Tags, an in-depth conversation with the Summit County Medical Examiner's Office Forensic Investigator Supervisor Amy Schaefer on the cause and manner of death and crime scene investigations. Let's remind everyone that the classifications of manners of death are natural, accident, suicide, homicide, undetermined, and pending. There wasn't a single solitary news story about Crystal's alleged suicide, nor a mention of her passing in this sleepy small town. We asked out loud in our first episode, and that question still stands. Why not? Why not? Within 1 hour and 45 minutes, less time than it would take for you to drive from Oak Grove to Shreveport, her death was immediately ruled a suicide. We bring a diverse series of angles to a story that needs very much to be told. A story where our ultimate goal is to enlighten, educate, and empower you, our listener. We give a voice to the voiceless and elevate the little guy in the true spirit of journalistic integrity. Our mission, as always, is to be true to the truth and shed the bright light of the truth. As we said, giving a voice to the voiceless, in this case, Crystal McCrory Jones, and the suspicious manner of her premature and untimely death through her sister, Jenna Gajewski Latiger, who's with us today. We are very pleased to spend more time with you. Jenna, we welcome you back to Light 'Em Up.
It's good to be here with you again, Phil. Thank you for inviting me again to your episodes.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Our pleasure for sure. We're glad to have you. Jenna, let's not waste any time. Let's dive right into the pot. To kick things off, has there been any other progress since we last spoke on the case, and more specifically, in the effort of reopening an investigation? Also, we want you to talk to us about your interview with KNOE News Channel 8. We were excited when we learned that they are opening up and conducting their own exclusive look into your sister's death. Share some background with us on that exciting new development as well.
Yeah, so we have a reporter. Her name is Miss Ridley. She's currently conducting interviews with members of the community of Oak Grove. She's getting all the facts lined out and taken care of. Last I heard, the interview that she did with me should air within the next week or two, but the sheriff has declined the opportunity to comment on the case to KNOE.
I see. Okay, well, some progress is progress, and that's a good thing, and we're glad that they're on the case, because more eyes and ears are only a good thing. That's a move in a positive direction.
Yes.
If you were a betting person, say, for example, at the Louisiana Downs Casino and Racetrack in Bossier City, looking back on the fact that KNOE is going to do a feature on your sister's case, how do you think this fact sat with the local sheriff, or sits with the local sheriff, that this case will finally get the attention that it should have gotten in the first place?
Well, I'd love to have some insight into how the sheriff is feeling about the fact that our family isn't choosing to go away silently. We were pretty candid with him from the very beginning that we only requested our concerns to be taken seriously, you know, that a proper investigation be done just to give us some sort of closure regardless of the outcome, and we just wanted to be heard. Everything else and how he feels is kind of up to him. He's the one that has to go to sleep at night knowing whether Crystal was given an opportunity to be heard or not. He's the one running the department and must know whether or not every employee takes their oath seriously. So his feelings are kind of up to him. I'm sure he's feeling pretty disgruntled right now.
Yeah, that's so true. It's up to him how he takes it. Like we'll say many times throughout this episode, because I believe it firmly, he had every opportunity to do it right the first time. So
he did.
It is what it is, but he has to own it. He has to own it. Yeah. As we transition further, we want to talk to the general public about a concept called complicated grief, or CG. The sudden death of a loved one is one of the most traumatic experiences that we can be confronted with. Complicated grief, or CG, can occur as a result of the death of a loved one, or a difficult divorce, say for example, or any life-altering traumatic experience. Life changes, like moving to a new location, or parental abandonment, or family conflicts, can trigger adjustment disorder. CG, or again, complicated grief, on the other hand, is caused by the death of someone close to you. CG, sometimes called persistent complex bereavement disorder, is much stronger than normal grief. Many people go through several stages of grieving after losing a loved one. With complicated grief, you may have trouble moving on for months, years, or longer, even some forever. You may also find yourself avoiding social contact, losing motivation to do daily tasks, or wishing that you had died yourself. As a service to the community, we want to be clear in the fact that if you feel these things after perhaps losing a loved one, you may need to see your doctor to talk about treatment for your CG. We encourage you to talk with your doctor. If you've lost a loved one and haven't been able to process it well, you may be experiencing CG. Again, that's called complicated grief. Again, your first step should be to talk to your doctor. They can help determine if you have CG or depression and what might be the best way to treat it. You can talk to your doctor about therapy and the proper course of treatment that is best for you. Your doctor can help you decide if these treatments are the right choice for helping you confront and in time endure your loss. Jana, we admire your strength and dedication and your determination to your sister's cause and case. Now, in thinking about you and your well-being, the cycle of grief is something everyone experiences, whether they give it thought intentionally or not. It's just part of our human experience as we try our best to process grief and loss. Some progress from one side of the chart that we provided you to the other at different rates. We're referring to the chart we sent to your attention, and we'll post that chart in the upcoming liner notes for this specific episode for everyone to see. It lists the hurt and loss, for example, on the left-hand side of the chart, and loss adjustment on the right-hand side. If you can envision the chart in your mind, it looks like a big letter U. It looks like a big letter U. Now, each person hopefully works their way through the chart to ultimately land on the right-hand side of loss adjustment, where they're able to understand, accept, and move forward in a more positive direction with the loss they suffered. But still, never discounting the loss. That's most important. You never discount the loss. Jenna, my question to you would be, where would you place yourself on the cycle of grief healing chart in this present moment?
Well, so Like you said, while grief is a cycle, it's also a process. And at this point in time, it kind of varies from day to day. But from last episode, I said I was kind of in that angry phase of grief. Now I'm kind of moving down towards the searching, maybe towards even the guilt and the loneliness stage, to where, you know, the memories hit me and then the guilt of, is there anything I could have done to save her from what happened to her from the town that she moved to? I'm in that stage right now.
I see. That makes perfect sense. It is definitely a process. You know, there's a lot of people that love you and care about you, and they're there to support you throughout this entire process. And you know that. I know you know that. I hope this forum and this opportunity for you to share your thoughts and emotions, I hope it provides some type of positivity to the overall process for you. That's our hope and that's our prayer. As a follow-up on that question, can you share with us what you may be doing to help deal with that anger that you had expressed during our first interview, which stemmed from having to be silent for such a long period of time? Share with us, are you exercising more, perhaps going for long walks, reading, maybe praying more or something? What are you doing to help yourself progress your way through these many and varied emotions that you must be going through?
So the biggest thing right now is the Justice for Crystal Facebook page, where I'm able to share not only memories of her, but I'm able to share some of the updates into her case with people of the community where I live, the community where she lived. You also mentioned therapy and the guilt cycle. I actually started going to therapy for the first time in my 34 years of life. That has been the absolute best gift you could give yourself, is to go and talk to someone about it. I'm a mental health counselor myself, so I was pretty reluctant to go see someone else about my problems, but it was the absolute best thing that I could do, was to go to therapy. So I go to therapy once a week, and my therapist is one of the best.
That's good. It really is. That's important. Self-care is not selfish. You know, self-care is the most important thing you can do. And one thing I've learned is that if you don't feel it, you can't heal it. So this is good. This is good that you're doing this. We salute you for that strength and courage to do that. So the law states clearly that truth, or a statement that is factually true, is considered to be an affirmative defense to slander and libel. So as long as the comment is true, there's nothing to worry about. Plus, if a person's a public official, they don't have any recourse because they're subject to criticism from the people that they serve. A person's entitled to their opinion. If a person couldn't express their opinion freely, well, then we'd certainly be living in Russia, where we've seen through the news and we've observed with the death of Alexei Navalny. So with this, you're not accusing anyone of anything. We know that. For the listeners, speak to what, in your estimation, after gathering and piecing together all of the facts and circumstances that surround your sister's death, and allegedly, we preface any response you may give with the word allegedly, as best as you can, and to the extent that you're willing, can you explain that fateful day of February 9th, 2023, from how you thought it unfolded? What is it you think happened to your sister as you envisioned it from your perspective?
I've gone over so many different scenarios in my head by myself, with friends, with close family members. I wish I could say that there was one certain aha moment that gave me clarity to say that this was the scenario, but whatever happened to my sister that day, it was awful. She was afraid. She felt alone. She didn't deserve anything that happened to her, just like no one does. I find it a possibility that an altercation occurred that got out of hand and things happened that cannot be reversed. Certain people will know more about what truly happened more than others, and I can only hope that they listen to their conscience and do the right thing, come forward and be honest about what happened that day.
To your knowledge, were there guns in the house? Was Crystal well-versed, trained, and familiar on how to use a handgun?
Actually, yes, there were several guns in the house. She carried one for protection. She was very, very well versed on how to use them. Actually, in crime scene photos that were turned over by public records request, there was one on the headboard directly behind where she laid. There was another long rifle shotgun to the left of the bed where she was at when she was deceased. There was a gun cabinet that was, I'm not sure if it was locked or not, but there were guns, an arsenal of guns throughout the entire house. They were everywhere.
I see. Okay. Now, without mentioning the pathologist's name, which we both know as it is listed clearly with his signature on the official autopsy report. We ran an open source search on the pathologist's name. We were very surprised on what our search returned. Can you share with us what you thought, what thoughts came to your mind when you read the fact-based material that we sent to you and the subsequent material that you found in your own open source search of his name? What were your thoughts that immediately came to your mind?
Immediately, with all of the discrepancies in my sister's autopsy report, with all of the internal and external things being wrong, I said that there's absolutely no way that this is another coincidence, with it being other cases out there that made national news where his testimony actually got people let go from prison because his testimony was thrown out. So I just thought there was no way that this was just another coincidence and all the other coincidences in this case.
Yeah, I agree. My jaw hit the table when I saw that. Yeah. I just was like, whoa, wait a second. This is incredible. So to piggyback on that first question, how do those glaring errors on or in the autopsy report in Crystal's case make you feel? And do those errors make you feel anything about the overall determination being suicide versus a homicide?
So I have a lot to say about this. Coroners and medical examiners are trained to be aware of even the smallest details. Literally because of this, they should be held to a higher standard of responsibility. Their job is to read and interpret the story that everybody, literally the body, has to tell that lands on their table. These people can no longer speak for themselves and therefore are literally in the hands of these officials to take science, detail, and fact to determine what happened. These professionals should treat every person on their table with the attention and respect that they deserve. Again, death robs you of so much, but you still have the right to dignity and respect even in death. When the simplest details were factually incorrect, in the case of the spelling of Crystal's name, her physical appearance, and the like, then it's hard to believe that the more minute, more complicated, important details were factually regarded and reported. When the narrative that he set forth starts off incorrect from the very beginning, I can only ascertain that bigger things were missed that would help determine the true cause of death. My sister was failed on so many levels. This report in itself was super hard for me to read because I knew there would never be a second chance to correct the mistakes made here because she was cremated. Because they didn't do their job right, he's made our fight even harder. Crystal was failed by those who had a responsibility to take the time and care to find out what actually happened to her.
That's so true. I mean, there's so many aspects, especially the aspect of Crystal being cremated, that just takes away the opportunity for a so much further in-depth investigation. And that's really, really what needs to happen. There never was a proper investigation from the beginning, and it just was a snowball effect from the start to the end.
Yeah.
It really is tragic. It really is. Family members choose up sides all the time. It happens in my family. It happens in everyone's family from time to time if there's an issue that divides. So keeping in mind family members that do choose up sides, and they do this like people pick sides on a basketball court at a local playground. For example, when there's a divorce, not everyone will make it through the process and be on your side. Have you experienced or encountered a similar kind of thing where some family members may take sides with one person over another because of an issue in the family? And if yes, how have you tried to work your way through that minefield of personalities?
Like you said, cases like this are bound to cause some friction within families. Ours is no different. We try to be respectful and understanding of how other people may need to feel, or more importantly, how they need to process something this traumatic, because not everybody processes things the same way. But no doors are ever closed. We need answers and closures to move forward. We'll always be a family, and there'll always be a safe haven to return to, even in the hardest of times. So even those that may not agree right now, if something comes out later on and something changes their mind and they say you're right, that door is always going to be open. And that's what family's about.
Yeah, absolutely. And your answer pretty much covered my next question, but I want to ask it anyways, because there may be some good nuggets of wisdom in there that the people might be able to benefit from. So I would ask, to follow up on that question, what would you suggest to the people who may find themselves in a similar situation, whether the focus may be the traumatic, unexpected death of a loved one, or even perhaps a divorce or any issue that divides? What would you suggest to them on how to work their way through that process?
This is kind of how I found myself working through the process. I would say be kind to yourself. Acknowledge the feelings as they come. Don't try to push them down or ignore them. Turn to those you trust and love, and find your people who are there to be your community whenever you need them. And sometimes that's not family members. Sometimes that's friends. Also acknowledge that no feeling is permanent. It'll lessen, it'll soften. Sometimes it'll go away, and sometimes it'll come back in waves. Take the time to grieve, so that you can be open later for all the good things life will offer you. As awful as it is now, you'll find your new normal, whatever that new normal is. I'm not sure what it is yet, but one day it's going to come. You're going to move forward, you're going to go on, and you're going to have bad days, and that's okay. But you'll also have good days, and that's okay as well. The most important thing, though, is be gentle with yourself and your loved ones, because not everybody grieves the same way.
That's true. I'm glad I asked, because there was a world of wisdom in that response. Fantastic. And I know that's going to help the people that are listening. And we currently have listeners who are in 110 countries around the globe. So
that's amazing.
Well, it's been a lot of hard work, and it's through the dedication of special guests and the delivering of information like yourself on our show. So we are grateful to you, certainly, for coming on the show, for sharing this with our listeners. It's a very personal topic, so we understand, and we're grateful to you nevertheless. If you had the opportunity to speak with Crystal's husband, the last person who purportedly saw Crystal alive, one-on-one, alone in a room, if it's something that you'd be willing to share with us, what, if anything, would you say to him?
This question took some thought, took a lot of thought, actually. But I would say to him, my sister was an amazing woman who deserved so much more in life. She gave herself completely to you, 100%. She loved you and fought through hard times to stay by your side. She is not disposable, nor was she replaceable. She had worth, and she was precious. She had her shortcomings, just like you, but she was human. She was my sister, and she was my family. There were so many scenarios that could not have ended with this outcome. No one, and I mean no one, should be disposed of simply because they are no longer convenient, or because you are of the opinion you have found shinier, newer playthings. She deserved way better than what she got.
Amen. Amen to that. Wow. It's hard to move forward after that response. That response was gripping, gripping. In all honesty, looking back and what we've heard in this process, you know, I truly believe that the sheriff of West Carroll Parish, like I said before, he can get happy in the same pants that he gets sad in. And from where we sit as police accountability and transparency advocates, he and his deputies have had every chance to do the right thing from the beginning. Would you agree that he being upset about the case being investigated could be considered to be misplaced? Placed anger, and all of this could have been alleviated and prevented by simply investigating the case fully from the beginning.
Yeah, when our family had the initial concerns, we were, for lack of a better word, dumbfounded at the sheer scope of anger being shown at the flip of a switch when he thought his integrity was being questioned, whether, you know, it was realistic or not. However, as we came forward with more and more information, more and more concerns, we were met with more resistance from him and from his officers. If there would have been a very basic investigation done from the beginning, I wouldn't be talking to you at this point. We would probably have gotten some answers, formed some definite conclusions, and moved on, regardless of the outcome. The things that we discovered have given us all pause for concern. At some point, you must ask yourself, is there no need for an investigation? Is it really this cut and dry? Or rather, is there something more concerning going on that prevents even the most basic police investigation from being performed? And why? What do you have to hide?
Yeah, that's the truth, Ruth, right there, I tell you. This question parallels very close to the previous one. Why do you feel the sheriff took such a combative, hostile position with you when you were simply asking legitimate and relevant questions as to the facts, as you are a family member who was the immediate next of kin to the person in this case who was deceased? Why do you think the sheriff took such a combative, hostile position with you?
That's a very valid question that I simply don't have an answer for. I mean, we came from a place of respect and a place of concern that you can hear in the recorded meetings that we have. From the very first conversation, we stated that we were, in fact, a grieving family, but we just wanted answers. We admitted, you know, we're just grieving family. We could be in denial, but we wanted answers to the questions we had. Even if those answers are not the ones we wanted to hear, we still needed them to be looked at from a professional standpoint and to be taken seriously. I can't speak on the motives of the sheriff or what compelled him to react in the manner to which he reacted, because I wish I knew. I don't know this man from anything other than my family asked him for help, and we were met with unmitigated fierceness. In both conversations that we recorded that we had with him, he just became angry.
Wow, that's something. When there are multiple completely different answers to the simple question, which is, what were the husband's whereabouts on, during, and surrounding the death of his wife, what do you think that really means? Why would there be multiple completely different answers to that simple question?
Well, this is also a question I wish I had a concrete answer for. Again, could this just be a coincidence? And sure, but there are too many coincidences in this and all of this that has given my family massive pause for concerns. We've yet to be given the opportunity to get any of these answers. Why are there so many variations to his timeline? If this day was a, quote, normal day and like any other day, then why were there so many deviations to any other normal day? Why are so many versions of a simple timeline? We were told this was just like any other normal day, that he and my sister went about doing everything that they did, but we still have yet to get the exact same timeline from more than one person.
Yeah, that's fishy. That is. And my experience as an investigator, that needs to be dug into a whole lot more, for sure. With specific reference to the letter that was sent from your legal team about reopening the case, why do you think the sheriff and the district attorney have been slow in investigating or considering reopening this case, or to even extend a simple common professional courtesy with giving a response to your formal, respectful written request?
Why, indeed? We haven't been given any reason other than a just because we said so mentality. A proper response with sound reasoning would be greatly appreciated. That same letter was sent to the state police less than 2 weeks ago, and we haven't heard anything from the Louisiana State Police either.
Man, that's pitiful. That really is. Talking about protecting and serving, there's a lot of room, a lot of room for improvement there. What is it, Jenna? What is it about Crystal and her sweet face and smile that causes all these law enforcement officials to refuse to open a legitimate investigation? What is it about her?
You know, I think it has less to do with Crystal and more to do with other factors and individuals and their egos and them not wanting people to know that they botched an investigation. Because right now we're heartbroken to be at a stalemate caused by them not responding.
Yeah, the family needs answers. That's where it begins. That's where it ends. And it's their responsibility as law enforcement to provide some type of concrete evidence and answers and closure. It's part of the process. When a detective goes out and investigates a case, he's not just doing it to solve the case. He's doing it for the family members, the surviving family members, so that they can have some small amount of closure that they could live going forward. It's all part of the process. And if you omit any part of it, the entire system just crumbles. And
yes.
I can't see why they can't see it, because it's their job to see it. It really is. This question is parallel with the previous one. In your estimation, why do you think the Sheriff's Department devoted such a short length of time to the investigation of Crystal's death, which could easily be considered a death that was suspicious?
Yeah, I wish I knew more about how their department works. There are so many different factors. Are they short-staffed? Is there not enough funding? Do they need professionals with more experience and training? I can't profess to be a law enforcement specialist. It's just not part of who I am. I know that my sister deserved more time, effort, and energy that was given. Her death was ruled a suicide in 1 hour and 45 minutes. She deserved longer than 1 hour and 45 minutes of their time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jana, as we've reported on Crystal's case, a handful of listeners in the Oak Grove area have shared with us that in their opinion, things haven't been right since the current sheriff has taken office. These are their words, not ours. But more than one person has turned up dead. This is what they say. And they've expressed that the death had been quickly ruled a suicide. Now, whether it has or hasn't, an investigation would determine that, a thorough investigation. In their determination, in these people that have shared these facts with us, they said that there was a pattern that was more to it, more suspicious, that the circumstances were a little bit more suspicious, and there was evidence that pointed in other directions. You know, this is where you call home. This is where you lay your head at night. In your opinion, as a resident of the area, do you think other residents of the area of Oak Grove, Louisiana, should be concerned about their own personal safety and well-being? If this is what happened to Crystal, couldn't this happen to them or someone else as well?
I'm not one to adhere to fear tactics, but it's sad to think that other residents and families might have had similar experiences and might even be in fear. And there are other family members that have had things happen, and they do live in fear from living in that community. I don't live in Oak Grove myself. I live a town over, so I can't proclaim to anything regarding Oak Grove itself. What I can say to other families and other citizens is this. Some of these people are elected officials. If you feel like they can't provide the protection and services that are deemed necessary to provide a safe and balanced community, it's up to you to see that others are elected to office. Make phone calls, write emails, talk, make change happen. Keep up to date on their background. Where are these elected officials coming from? Do they have the training to hold these positions? There's a lot that can be done, and then maybe those elected officials can change the department and who holds the investigative positions.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Good advice, certainly. This case, I'm sure it's probably provided you with a law degree and an investigator's license as well. From all the legwork and footwork that you've had to do on the case on your own prior to getting the help from the highly competent legal team and investigative team that you've put together. In our last episode, we reported on the standard duties of coroners on autopsies and investigations in the state of Louisiana. And we itemized and listed out most, if not all of those duties line by line and one by one. From your knowledge of the facts in this case and in learning constantly throughout this entire process, isn't it mandatory and standard operating practice, procedure, and protocol to call in the state police when investigating an unattended death? Isn't that what the rules state?
From my knowledge, that is exactly what the rules state. And I'll reference two deaths without naming any names before my sister's death and after, where one was initially ruled a suicide, but they called the state police in April of 2023, where it turned into a homicide after the state police investigated. And then recently in December of 2023, the state police came in and that death was ruled a suicide under suspicious circumstances. So my sister's death was the only one that I can find that they did not allow the state police to come in and investigate.
Yeah, that just smells wrong. It just really does. And I'm sure it sits that way with a lot of people, certainly. There's no reason that they couldn't have investigated this case further.
Yes.
What has this process taught you about yourself?
That I'm a fighter. I have more courage than I thought I did. I'm resilient. But most importantly, that it's okay not to be okay, and that it's okay to need help and to ask for help. That's probably the most important thing.
I see. Yeah, and I agree. There's no shame in reaching out and asking for help. Actually, there is a lot of strength and a lot of courage in doing that in that process. In your thinking, is there a good old boy network, in your opinion, that can work against forward progress in a case such as your sister's? And if yes, what, if anything, has this process taught you or educated you as it relates to the good old boy network?
Well, that's exactly what I refer to it as now, is the good old boy network. Police departments are communities in and of themselves, because they have to be. They deal with things daily that we simply can't fathom, and they're constantly under high amounts of stress and threat, and I get that. However, there's a codex to be followed, and if someone does something wrong, even if they may be a brother and sister in blue, they have accountability just like civilians do. Turning a blind eye or sticking your head in the sand should not be an option. You should not be able to protect someone just because they wear a uniform. They're human too. They make mistakes, and they should be held accountable for those mistakes.
Well said. Absolutely. Let me ask you this. Is the good old boy network a way of life that will always be ingrained in Southern living? Or is it a good thing? Can it be a bad thing? Or is it simply the way things are?
Well, this is kind of tricky. The quote, boys will be boys mentality is present everywhere, not just in the South. And I've learned that in my research of cases that are like my sister's all throughout the United States, where investigations just simply aren't done. It's definitely not a good thing. I really don't think that the good old boy network is a good thing. But to answer this fully, I think we would have to start a completely different podcast, because we could go on for days about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I hear you 100%. you know, speaking for myself, growing up, I was taught that you could trust a police officer. Mm-hmm. If ever I was lost, that I could go to an officer and things would work out for the better. And a lot of people label me as being anti-cop or against the blue. But the truth of the matter is I'm not against honest, hardworking cops. I actually celebrate them, you know. But the truth must be told that, you know, I will not support any law enforcement officer or blindly back the blue for those officers who willfully break the law in the process of enforcing the law. That's just a no-go for me. What has this experience done to any esteem or respect that you have had for law enforcement officials before and currently?
So I have family and friends that are in law enforcement. Is this disappointing and frustrating? Absolutely. Does it mean that all police departments function this way? Absolutely not. There are so many individuals who do put on that uniform and do a job that those of us who have never served, we can never understand. I can't judge every law enforcement officer based on this. To do that would be greatly unjust to all the officers who truly give 100% to serve and protect their communities. It's never as simple or as cut and dried as we would like to think. I do have a massive respect for the men and women that do this job to the best of their ability. However, I will question from now on, I will question whether or not I can trust someone who holds that uniform until they can gain my trust. It's just not there. Just simply because you wear a uniform, I still have to be able to gain your trust. There is a wall up there that I don't think will ever come down that wasn't there before.
Yeah, I understand. I really do. I've worked closely with the law enforcement in my area, and it's like once you squeeze the toothpaste out of the tube, it's hard, hard, hard to get that trust, to get that toothpaste back into the tube. So I follow you 100% on that. I really do. And like you mentioned, we celebrate the good officers who show up every day, honor their oath, and perform their duties in a constitutional manner. Absolutely.
Yes.
Why don't you go ahead and share the information for the listeners regarding the Facebook page and anything else that you wanted to mention?
Okay, so we have a Facebook page. It's called Justice for Crystal McCrory Jones, and McCrory is spelled M-C-C-R-O-R-Y. There you can keep up to date with the different things that are happening. You can see memories of Crystal. It's just a good way to keep up with everything that's going on. The podcasts are listed on there, as well as when the episode from the local news airs, it'll be posted on there. We also have a change.org petition that is also Justice for Crystal McCrory Jones that you can go and sign. Our goal is 1,000 signatures. I believe we're close to 900 right now. And that petition is to hopefully get the district attorney or the sheriff's department or the state police to reopen her case. So that's what we're working towards now, is to get enough signatures to present that to someone to get her case reopened.
Okay, excellent job. Excellent job. I hope all of our listeners in all 110 of our countries that we serve, I hope they all avail themselves of that information. Jenna, as I mentioned from the beginning, we are in this fight standing firmly behind you and your family. We are here as a forum for updates and any information bulletins on the case. You know, we're only 10 digits away, as I told you before, and as I know that you know, justice comes to those that fight, not those that cry. And sure, there's a time and a place for tears, but then after the tears, they have to transform into action, which is what you're doing.
Absolutely.
And we're honored that you vested your trust in us to tell us this very personal and very important story. We know that justice delayed is justice denied, and Crystal and the good people of the Pelican State deserve much better. And Janet, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Phil, for the opportunity to not only share my sister's story, but to give my family a voice, something that we haven't had in over a year. I'm sure the fight's not over. I read cases all the time where it takes upwards of, you know, 9, 10, even longer years to get justice for a case, and to have someone stick beside you for all those years, that truly means a lot.
Hey, I want to thank my friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting. Their fresh-squeezed hydrating green tea, loaded with amino acids and antioxidants, help replenish and neutralize skin for that natural glow. Want to know the best part? Their tea is organically grown and chosen for skincare from 3,301 Korean native green tea varieties. The winning 1-2-3 punch combination consists of the youth-enhancing serum with black tea. Then you just dab dap, 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 a little bit of the eye serum underneath your eyes, and finally, the enhancing cream. Oh my goodness. Like Muhammad Ali used to say, I'm pretty, I'm still pretty. They offer innovative beauty solutions for men, also powered by the finest natural ingredients, responsibly sourced from Korea's pristine Jeju Island. Their proprietary extraction methods preserve the purity and potency of these wholesome ingredients from plant to bottle to your skin, offering advanced formulas that safely address all skin concerns without the use of harmful chemicals and preservatives. With the wonders of nature at the heart of Innisfree, they take care to preserve and protect the environment in all that they do. We want to thank our friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting of Light 'Em Up. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube and Instagram at Rizzo's Protective Group. We're very excited about being ranked 10th out of the top 35 criminal justice podcasts as ranked and listed by FeedSpot. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to FeedSpot at www.feedspot.com. And please, por favor, per favore, visit our friends at https://newsly.me. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. You can browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. Hey, stop scrolling, start listening. You can follow any topic, as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin. It'll find you the latest articles and read them to you. Hey, it's as easy as that. And to top it off, they have podcasts as well. Explore trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Our podcast, Light 'Em Up, is there too. I started using it as my default podcast app, and you can too. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me or from the link in the podcast description liner notes and use the promo code Light 'Em Up. And Light 'Em Up in this case is spelled L1GHTEMUP. All one word. That's L1GHTEMUP. All one word.